Hey guys, I just wanted to reach out to you and let you know that Surewinder is still selling amazing products. Some of you guys have been dragging your feet for whatever reason. If your shoulder hurts, do not waste time. Pull the trigger. I just bought four or five of them, and we had two guys out. You know how much it cost me to pay for two guys being out with bad shoulders? We just pulled the trigger and we said, listen, everybody's going to have one on a truck. It's mandatory. You got to use it. Don't hesitate. Don't wait till your guys go down. It's going to cost you more. Buy a Surewinder.
Hello, everyone. Spoke with Mike yesterday. I'm super pumped about the content he's going to be delivering today. We're going to let everybody get on for just a second. I'll do announcements and then he'll be joining us in a few minutes. First of all, welcome. If you haven't been part of a GDU group, GDU is a mastermind for some of the most brilliant people in our industry. It's where we exchange ideas and help each other out. That can be in the form of just, I guess, encouragement or resources, accountability, friendships. So all of that happens in GDU. It's a pretty special place, in my opinion. What makes it great is the people that are in it. They're committed, and there is a fee associated with it. I feel like without a fee, people wouldn't show up or take it serious. So we do charge for this service. We also have Jen that runs it full time. So that goes to help pay for her and our, we have a GDU summit every year. GDU summit this year is going to be in Las Vegas. If you have not registered and you're interested, if you have questions, feel free to message me direct. But we have garagedooru.com/summit is the registration page. We've got some great content lined up for you. It's going to be all about leadership development. And I'm really pumped. We are looking into securing 2025 summit. I think I've been talked off the ledge with Puerto Rico. And we are considering going to Disney. So I'm wanting to make it very family friendly, where people bring their wives and their children or their husbands and children, depending on how that stacks up. So we will be announcing that at Summit once we have it locked in. I also have monthly webinars like this one. So if you want to participate in educational information, a lot of them are free. This one was not. I had to pay Mike, and we also got books. And so I charged non-GDU members to access this. But we do webinars like this pretty regularly. I also do sales training for service professionals. If you are interested, we have one on the 21st and 22nd of March and one on May 2nd and 3rd. And that's $1,099. If you're a GDU member, you got a discount code for 20% off. It is here in Atlanta. It's in person. It's a two-day event. And all of the feedback I've gotten from the service professionals that have come have been their numbers have skyrocketed and they've seen great success from it. And so business owners love it. I don't just teach sales. I teach professionalism, accountability. They should be tracking their numbers. Most people aren't. And so we spend a lot of time on being a professional, not just a salesperson. Let's see here. Looks like Steph is excited about Disney, possibly, or my training. I'm not sure which one. We'll say my training because most likely it's Disney. But with that, I'm just going to see if Jen has anything. Jen, you got any announcements that we need to share?
I think you covered everything. I'm excited about Disney as well.
Man, this is going to be good. I'm not like a huge Disney fan, but I can tell you that Slinky Dog, I think is the ride, is like my favorite. It's, I don't know why. I love Slinky Dog. So we'll be probably going to Orlando, staying near the parks or in the parks, and trying to get everybody park passes and just trying to have a good time. All of us go live up our best life and be kids. So I believe that business owners get kicked in the teeth a lot and they deserve to have fun as well. So really important to me to make sure that happens. We're waiting on our boy. He should be here any second. He wrote this book called All In. If you have not read that yet, you should have received the book. If you registered, if you did not receive the book, please let us know. I did get two of them returned to me. I do have the labels, so I kind of know who they are, but I forgot. But if you would like your book, just hit me up and let me know. Let's see.
Boom, 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 boom. You did it.
Beautiful. It's good to have you back.
It's good to see you, Ryan.
It's always good.
Well, it's good to
So,
be here.
everyone, Mike first joined us December 2021 when we launched Virtual Door Dealer Conference, which was a huge risk for me. I committed to like 80 grand the first month before we even promoted it. It was my first event. I had 100 people tell me that garage door guys are not going to sit in front of a computer for 2 days. You're crazy. You're going to lose your butt. My company was only like a year and a half old. We did not have the money to lose. But guess what? We ended up getting some great sponsors from LiftMaster, Sherwinder, Somer, Genie. We crushed it. We had 100 dealers sign up. And it was probably one of my favorite events I've ever done. It was technically one of the most difficult, but it went off without a hitch. And Mike, you came on that and crushed it and was one of the highlights of the whole event from the polls we did. And then afterwards, you volunteered to do a little webinar with our group. And so, always great to have you. Thank you. Great author. He's written some amazing books. Probably one that you know for sure is Profit First, which has changed so many business owners' lives, including his, that methodology. And he's written a few others that are great on marketing and operations. This one is All In, it's on leadership. And so that's why we're here. And this is the big kick I'm on right now is leadership. So we brought you back.
It's a joy to be back. And I remember us talking about that event, the commitments you made to serve your community. And I was saying, sometimes when we paint ourselves in the corner, we learn how to jump out of corners. And that's what you did. Like it became a transformational moment. And sometimes we need that. So
Yeah.
well done.
Thank you.
You want to kick things off? I'm ready to
Go
go.
ahead. Let's go.
All right. You
Got
got it. Hey, I
25.
would love
My
just because
time's a little short, but if they're late, they missed it. So
All right, you got it. And I see quite a few people have arrived. So in the chat, if you're willing, make sure you set it to everyone at the bottom as opposed to host. I'm just curious how many folks are in your team. And when I say team, I don't mean you and employees part-time or full-time. I mean, do you have contractors you use and so forth? What constitutes your team? If you could post that in the chat, it'll give me a context on your size. I want to speak to that. As we're doing that, I want to share a story, Ryan, that I experienced my own business. I had a team at this point of 30 people. I was in computer forensics, which means computer crime investigation. And I was sitting in my office, and maybe I did that paint myself in the corner thing. I was running numbers all day. I said, oh my gosh, this is the year that we can achieve $10 million in revenue. If we simply do this and that and this other thing, I can take down my number one competitor and I can grow my business to this dream size. This is the corporate vision for my organization. And, in great effect, I decided to announce this to everyone. That's what a leader does. And I walked out of the office. We had a meeting area that was right outside my office. And there was a big whiteboard. So before I called everyone in, I wrote on the board $10 million in like bubble letters. And then I put it one of those big sticky post-it notes, like those massive ones over it, so you couldn't see the number. I queued up the most pump-up song of all time, or at least of the 80s, Eye of the Tiger. You got to play it. I mean, Rocky crushed other people when Eye of the Tiger was playing. So I'm like, we're going to crush it when this is playing. I call my colleagues in, that riff, ding, ticka ding, ticka ding, ticka ding. it's building up in the background. And I have it slowly. I have my assistant, Patty, slowly turning up the volume. And as that's playing, I said, team, we've been working so hard over the last few years. I sat the last day in here just thinking about our vision. Now, I've determined that we can achieve $10 million. I think we can take our biggest competition. And that's when I did with great flair. I grabbed that post note and said, and we this year will achieve $10 million in revenue. And you hear Eye of the Tiger playing in the background. I'm like, bring it. And there was silence. I mean, it was like you could hear a cricket. I'm like, $10 million in revenue. Do I have to do the guru move where I do prayer hands and bow my head? And so no one said boo. And everyone walked back to the office. I'm like, what the hell just happened? I set our corporate vision. What's going on? Patty, my assistant, who was working the volume, comes over and said, Mike, I understand that's the corporate vision, but what about our visions? I said, what do you mean? So what about the team? We all have visions for ourselves. That's your vision. She goes, you get the bigger house, Mike. You get the new car if we achieve this, but what about us? And that became the realization that perhaps the best leaders understand the visions of everybody. And that perhaps a corporation wasn't about my dream. You know, the vision we set for our organization isn't what Steph put 7 people, Mass put 8 people, John has 26 folks. Everyone on your team, Robert, Derek, Vincent, on your team, you have 8 or 10 or 26 visions happening. The great leaders step into understanding what the vision is. I subsequently realized that I had one colleague looking to buy a new house, someone that was fighting a disease, another person that wanted to spend more time with their family, someone wanted to learn to play guitar. Everyone has individual visions. And the great leaders understand the collective desires of our team. And it's not about blocking and tackling. I mean, it's not about Make-A-Wish Foundation. It is about blocking and tackling for them. How are you going to get that new house? What are you going to do for it? Can I help you make some introductions in the market? But the biggest thing is just keeping the dream in front of them. And once I started to do that and had this realization, my team put my dream, the corporate vision, in front of me. A great leader does not stand in front of the group and kind of break the ice and march forward like a wedge. A great leader locks arms with their team and marches forward in achieving the dream. That's the biggest lesson. And things shifted, Ryan, you know this, during COVID. My gosh, did things shift. It used to be back in the day that our team had desires. I wish I could work from home at times or have flexibility. Desires have become demands, expectations. Since COVID, I demand flexibility. I want now is I demand remote work, or at least because the work you guys do is on site. I understand that, but I don't want to have to come to the office, dispatch there. I want my home to be my dispatch point. So expectations have become desires have become requirements and expectations. What I've spent the last 7 or 8 years now studying is what makes a great leader. And admittedly, I don't consider myself a great leader, but I am now a competent leader, where before I was a bumbling idiot, and I'm slowly building my way there. I've gone on this search. And what I wanted to share when Ryan and I were talking behind the scenes, the best of what I've discovered, that I hope becomes transformative for your business. And I want to start off with a story that I think will drive home a very important point. Good leaders tell their team what to do. Great leaders ask their team what we can do. There was a story that came out of Russia. It was a museum. And at the same time, there was a museum in the US in Baltimore that had a story that ran a very divergent, different path. In Russia, there is a museum called the Boris Yeltsin Presidential Museum. When a president retires, similar to the States, they set up a museum or some kind of facility recognizing that person. And in this case, it's a museum with fine art. In Russia, I'm going to try to draw this. There was a piece of fine art they call Three Figures, and it's contemporary art, but it kind of looks, I mean, this is a very simplistic version, but it kind of looks like this. It's three figures, no faces. It's just this very contemporary piece. They hired a guard named Alexander Leselyev, and his job was to protect the art. They told him exclusively what to do. He was told to stand in front of the art. He was told not to make eye contact with the art. His job was to protect it. He was told to stay there for 8 hours when his job was done, ensure the other guard was there, and then he leaves. At the same time, there was another museum in Baltimore where the guards were not told what to do. They were asked what they should do. The museum curator approached one guy, his name was Michael York, and said, hey, tell us, what is your experience like being a guard here? And what have you observed? They asked. And Michael said, well, I'm in this one area regularly. And honestly, I'm basically a glorified bathroom attendant. The majority of questions that are asked of me is, where's the bathroom? But he goes, also, I observe people talking about the art. And there was one piece, it was called Medusa's Knocker. It was, actually sounds very inappropriate. It was a door knocker. It was a door knocker in the shape of Medusa. And what he did was he noticed that people had different perspectives of it. Children would talk and ask what the story is of a woman with snake hair. Other people said she was a victim and others a villain. And these interesting stories came out. He had more perspective on this art than even the curators themselves. So he said, I know more about this piece and how people are interacting with it. And the curator said, well, what can we do? He's like, I could tell us where the pieces should go and what we should have. It ultimately became this exhibit they called Curating the Art, or Guarding the Art. And the guards became the curators. They had 17 or 18 guards that selected the pieces, painted the walls, handled the insurance, and went through the entire experience of being curators. They were asked what to do. Now, jumping back to Russia, three figures. Within one day of employment, Alex Vasilyev, who was assigned to protect the art, was fired because the art was destroyed by him. What he did was he decided the art would look a little bit nicer if it simply had eyes. And he grabbed a Sharpie and he drew eyes on him. You won't be surprised that Alexander quickly was terminated from his position. Ironically, a week later, he fell out of a 13-story window. I don't know. It was but coincidence. That's a joke. That didn't happen. He was poisoned to death. So Alexander Vasilyev was fired from his job for destroying the stuff he was supposed to protect. And the lesson here is this, that when we, humanity, are forced to comply, we will seek to defy. Perhaps it's something you want to write down. When we're forced to comply, we'll seek to defy. But in the Baltimore Museum, the employees were nourished and they flourished. They were invited to expand. The number one exhibit in attendance and donations raised of all time by the Baltimore Museum of Arts was the Guarding the Art exhibit. It happened about 2 years ago, and there was a massive turnout. There was such engagement, and the guards have been the most productive, best guards they've ever had. Everyone has stayed. And in the guarding industry, there's a lot of turnover. You know, working for a day like Alexander Vasilyev ain't too uncommon. Most people work for a very short period of time. But these guards have stayed the longest, minus two. Two have left the museum to become curators. They are now professional curators. Good leaders tell people what to do. They force them or expect them to comply, and people naturally defy. But great leaders ask people what to do. And by nourishing, they start flourishing. Think about it from your own life's experience. If you ever rented a car, tell me what the worst car rental agency is of all time, in your opinion. I'd love to see that in the chat. I think it's Hertz, but there's a million out there that stink. And here's what I experienced is I went to the local Hertz to rent a car, and you have to go through this crazy application process, you know, fill out this form, sign this. Do you want this insurance? Do you want that? Blah, blah, blah. And then they give you the rules. If you return the car without a full tank of gas, you'll be charged like $10 a gallon to recharge the thing. If there's a scratch or a scuff, you'll be penalized. Oh, and the clean side interior is expected, or you'll be penalized. So you get these rules. Then you go out that final checkpoint, the DMZ checkpoint, where there's a security guard there. There's sirens wailing. There's lights blurring, you know, spinning around. There's that gate in front of you and the spikes coming up. And only after they check your license for the 100th time does the gates open and you finally get to leave the DMZ. So what do I do? I instantly do donuts in the parking lot in that Prius I rented. When I see a traffic light, I will skid into it. And gosh, when that turns green, I am flooring and peeling out. And I don't know your experience. I see Josh is also not the biggest Hertz fan. He wrote a note right to me, to the host. But I suspect you too, when you've rented a vehicle, you treat it a little bit differently than you do your own car. You surely don't take it for a car wash before you return it. So why is this? It's human nature. When we are forced to comply, we will seek elbow room. We'll get back at the person forcing us to comply. And yet most leaders, guilty as charged, tell my team, this is what's expected of you. And if you fail to do it, you ain't going to be with the organization much longer. And you do succeed, that means you get a bonus. We'll keep you on. Maybe one day you can aspire to have a higher title. Great leaders don't tell, they ask. But I found there's other things they do too. And I wanted to dig into a model that you can use and leverage in growing your organization, regardless if you have one or four or seven or 26 people. And I'm going to go back to my little overhead to do it. There is a traditional model for businesses that we call the pyramid structure. And it looks something like this. We start off with, if you own the company, the bar, you know, real high up here, and we put in, you know, president or me or something like that. And then below it, we have a structure where we have other positions. Maybe you have your lead technician or service department. Maybe you have your finances here, and maybe you have sales or whatever. And it depends on the size of your organization. You may have a person wearing multiple hats, and below them, there's some roles and functions. And a chart can look something like this. This pyramid structure depends on command control. I send down commands this way, and the feedback comes back this way. Pyramid structure. What this necessitates is that we match people's talent to titles. Meaning, I need a CFO. Who can fill that role? I need a salesperson. Who can fill that role? I need a receptionist. Who can fill that role? And that's how this pyramid structure works. The challenge with matching people's talent to titles is that there's always, or rarely, a good matchup. I hired a receptionist. Her name was Petra. We hired Petra, and I told Petra, your job is to greet walking customers. This is back in the day when we had them, and answer the phones and take care of our customers. But it doesn't happen all the time. So if there's quiet time, do some invoicing, take care of our data. Our CRM needs to be tracked. My salesperson at the time, it was Paul. And Paul, his job was to close deals, to farm, build and maintain relationships and so forth. Well, when I looked at them, Petra was amazing socially. People loved coming to our office and spending a little bit of time with Petra or getting a phone call. She was horrible, horrible at doing the data entry and stuff like that. There was inaccuracies and stuff that wasn't correct. And in the traditional model, she can't fill that title. She's out. She's done. And Paul, he was a great closer. He knew how to crunch the numbers and so forth and determine when a person was primed to make a decision. He's a horrible farmer. He wasn't good at building relationships. That's when I realized matching talent to titles is what good leaders do. But what great leaders do is they match talent to tasks. So write that down. Great leaders match talent to tasks. Within the reception job, there is definitely, or title, there's responsibilities, including customer management, greeting the customers and so forth. And there was data entry and so forth. And in the sales role, there was closing, there was farming. And then once I knew all of the individual tasks, I said, what could Paul do that was great? He was a great closer. Paul was also great at data entry. And what was Petra great at? Well, Petra was fantastic customer service, which also translated to farming. What I realized is a web structure was forming here. When you match talent to tasks, you get the most out of people. So we said, hey, Petra, would you be willing to call upon prospects and new customers and have conversations? Like, oh my gosh, want to. I would love to. And we told Paul always said, hey, instead of you doing the farming and maintaining relationships, you're great at the number crunching. Would you be willing to work on our finances and stuff and measure what's going on? He's like, my gosh, I'd love to. Petra, by the way, I don't know if you know this, in Greek is Peter. So we actually did take from Peter and gave to Paul, ironically. But we moved into a web-like structure. Great organizations do not use the pyramid structure, which is immovable. It's inflexible. They use web-like structures where we have all of these different tasks that need to be done, and we match up people to the tasks. Actually, in nature, if you study what's called biomimicry, what we find is pound for pound, a web, a simple natural spider's web, is the strongest structure on the planet, pound for pound. A pyramid is massive and heavy and can never be moved. A web, pound for pound, is stronger and more flexible. It can actually even handle hurricane forces. Let's build an organization where we match talent to task, and you'll find you'll have a leaner, more flexible organization. It does start to blur the lines of titles. And some people, we want titles because of what it means for our ego. One employee at that company, who we were a small company. We had at the time probably 10 people, but we decided to look big. We should have a CFO. And when we brought Mark on to be our CFO, he was really just a bookkeeper, and that was the role he was serving. But what happened was he came to me 6 months later and said, Mike, it's funny, I was just looking at some jobs online about CFOs. I'm proud to be a CFO for this company. I noticed you're underpaying me a little bit. I'm making about $50,000 here a year. And I don't know if you know this, but CFOs make, you know, usually about $1.5 to $1.7 million. And I'm like, Mark, you're not really a CFO. He goes, yes, I am. Look at my card. And that's where the great confusion started. Many small business owners make the mistake of assigning titles that people believe they are when they aren't. So the power is match talent to task and simply say, here's the roles you're serving the organization, and start obliterating or removing the titles. That's the strategy.
Hey guys, I found something that changed my business and I want to share it with you. We've created packages that have included some of the best products in our industry to offer our service customers. The heart of that package is Stealth Hardware Kit. Stealth Hardware is the quietest hinges on the market. I challenge you to buy at least one of these, test it for yourself. Put it on your truck and design a quiet performance package for your customers willing to pay for a better, smoother running door. Buy your Stealth Hardware Kit at ServiceSpring, do a search for quiet hinge, and then buy that. You can buy a double or single door, 7 or 8 foot tall, and promise you, it'll change your service forever.
Somer USA and Somer Group want to thank you for an incredible year and the trust you put in them and their products. As you know, Somer places high value on relationships, education, customer service, innovation, and professionalism. And they are grateful to you for your part in the fostering and dissemination of these values. If there is any way Somer can support you in your journey, whether through their products, the values they hold to, or the knowledge Somer has gained through interaction with door dealers across the world, please reach out to the team at your convenience. They are here to serve you. Again, thank you from the entire Somer team. Check them out at SomerUSA.com. Tell them Ryan sent you.
The second thing I learned was about people's ability. And I'm going to go back to my overhead here. The traditional approach to finding someone for your team is to look for what's called experiential ability. Installed garage doors before, you have experience there. What's your capability? You handy with equipment? What's your ability? Well, what I found is someone's abilities is made up of three substantial layers. And the first layer, which makes up about 10% of someone, is their experiential ability. That's what shows on the resume. And the conclusion is what people have done in the past is what they can do in the future. I don't know if you ever hired someone just based upon a resume. You may have found that, ironically, just because they say they've done in the past doesn't mean they're capable at it. So hiring people based upon resumes or interviews based upon experience usually generates very little. The next level is innate. Very few companies analyze this, but innate talent is how you're naturally wired. there's tools like Enneagram or StrengthsFinder that you can use to see how people are naturally wired. It gives you an insight into their energy and ability and intelligence and their fit in your organization. But what I want to talk about is the biggest component that almost no one is considering. What it is potential ability. Now, here's how it works. Imagine if you and I were starting a rock band. We're going to, Ryan, I'm talking to you right now. It's me and you. We're starting a rock band. And let's say we want the greatest guitarist of all time. We're going to do some 80s tunes. I ain't the guy. I don't know if you are, but it's probably not us. But we can call on, if he was still alive, Eddie Van Halen, because we know Eddie Van Halen has the experience and the ability to be an amazing guitarist. But he would laugh at us. If we could even get him on the phone, he'd be like, huh, I already got a band, kind of making millions and tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions. I think I'm good. The question is, how do we get Eddie Van Halen? And how do we get the Eddie Van Halen of garage door installers? You look for potential. And here's how you do it. Through workshops and experiences. There is a $500 billion industry, a $500+ billion industry that doesn't do interviews. They don't look at your resume. They put you on the field. It's the sports industry. You're not going to try out for an NFL team and they're going to go, you know what? Don't touch the field. Instead, we'd rather just hear about you. You fluent in Spanish. Well, what's your background? Maybe you're a fit for the team. No, show us. There's two types of experiences that people can demonstrate, or two types of demonstrations. One is qualifying skills. Put them on the job, have them demonstrate. But the other way is a recruiting tool. I don't know if you know this, but in the sports industry, they recruit by doing workshops or camps. I played sports in high school, cross, not a particularly good athlete. I played. One day I went to a lacrosse camp. I'm from the Northeast. There's a camp called Hobart, a university called Hobart. And we went up there to play along with 300 other students. And what I noticed was interesting, as we were practicing over the 5 or 6 days, the coaches would go to certain athletes and tap them on the shoulder and say, gosh, you're showing certain talents here. We want to take you to another field where you can explore those talents, where you can compete against higher level competition. And everyone was getting better, including myself. I never got tapped on the shoulder, by the way. But by the end of that camp, two kids were invited to play for Hobart Lacrosse. It blew me away. It wasn't just a training ground. It was a recruiting camp, and no one knew. Now, here's the greatest thing. I ended up playing collegiate level lacrosse because, in part, that camp. Everyone gets better. Here's what I invite you to do. You can find someone's potential by running a camp. We actually could have found Eddie Van Halen, Ryan and me, if we ran a guitar workshop for 12 years olds, because when Eddie Van Halen was 12 is when he first started playing guitar. And we could have said, hey, anyone that's, 10 to 15 years old, we're putting on a camp to learn to play guitar. Potential always shows itself in three stages. First, curiosity. Secondly, desire. Lastly, thirst. Always these three levels. People are curious, will show up for education. People that are enjoying the education and want to get more will have desire to learn. And people who can't quit it, thirst, are the people you want. We say we want A players, top talent, all those words. It's wonderful. Do you know what top talent does the best in the industry? They're interested in learning more. The best want to be better. So put on a workshop, an educational event. Do not make it a recruiting ground. Don't say, hey, we're looking for garage door installers. Who wants to be one? Saying, ever interested in installing a garage door? Curious how the process works? We're here to teach you the process. The wonderful thing is you can even charge for it. We could have charged $100 for our guitar workshop and maybe Eddie's parents would have paid it. But when we were teaching it, we've also observed, as everyone was improving and learning skills, that Eddie had this uncanny advantage. He had desire and thirst. He couldn't put the guitar down. You'll find by doing a workshop that certain people can't quit it. And this is not just theory. This is happening now in the business world, and you just have the opportunity to exploit it. Home Depot. I know you know them. Home Depot does a workshop. They call it Building a Birdhouse. Perhaps you've even been invited to it or done it yourself. You can go to your local Home Depot, bring a kid or whatever, and build a birdhouse. They have someone teaching and instructing. Everyone's getting educated, and they have an observer. Did you know that's a recruiting ground? Probably not. They don't tell you. What they're doing is observing. They say, what parent here is the most engaged? Who's the one getting the job done? Who's the one helping other parents and asking questions? Who's showing that desire? Who's the one who stays the longest, comes the earliest? They have the thirst, and they go to those people and tap them on the shoulder and say, my gosh, you're showing skills and interest. of a Home Depot type of employee. Will you ever consider working here? We'd love to give you an application. They recruit there. We can do the same. Invite your people, invite your customers, invite your competition's employees to come to a workshop on a specific piece of education and see who has desire and thirst. And listen, I know it may be a little bit overwhelming to consider putting on an educational event. Here's the ultimate hack. If there is an educational event for the type of people you're looking, maybe some kind of garage installers workshop at an adult education class, go as a student specifically to observe the other students and look for the students that have curiosity, desire, and thirst, and shake their hands and tell them, hey, we'd love to have you work with us. Last thing I wanted to share with you before we wrap up is this concept called ownership. The most common reframe I hear from people is, I wish my employees would simply act like owners. I wish my team would act like owners. Well, you know, you can. It goes back to a concept called psychological ownership. Psychological ownership is the emotion, the feeling of owning something, even if we don't. You can give people the sense of ownership without giving them equity. I own stock in Ford. I own 100 shares, not a big investor. But I'll tell you one thing. I drove by a Ford dealership recently and I looked at it and I didn't say, I own a few bricks of that building. They're mine. No, even though I have legal equity, I didn't have a sense of ownership. I also have a Ford pickup truck and that car I own. Now here's the irony. I take great care of it. I know everything about it. I do wash the pickup truck, but I actually don't legally own it. The bank owns it. I'm making installments. So you don't have to have legal ownership to have psychological ownership. And psychological ownership is what we want to achieve. So the question, of course, is how do you do this? You do three things. Don't tell. Remember, ask. Invite people, ask people to what they're interested in most. So in your job, in your role, what do you like to do most? Ask them. You will find the things that they want to, A, have more knowledge about. So one way to achieve more psychological ownership is to have more knowledge about something. So when someone shows interest in something, give them an education on it and they're more engaged in it. The second thing is the ability to personalize it. So the more I can make it my own, the more I sense I own it. My truck, I have a bumper sticker on the back. I can do whatever I want to modify it to make it more mine. I can personalize the radio stations. I don't do that in the rental car. And the last part is deep knowledge. So the more knowledge I have, so I want knowledge, personalization, and control. Control meaning I want to be able to park it, put it where I want. So with your employees, ask them what they're interested in. Then give them the ability to gain more knowledge, give them the ability to personalize it, make it their own, and give them the ability to have control and authority over it, to park it where they want to park it. Now, here's the last component. One risk we run of giving people ownership, that feeling of ownership, is fiefdoms can happen. We block and tackle and say, this is mine, and I'll block everyone out. The highest level of psychological ownership is called collective psychological ownership. It's when multiple people feel it's theirs. So have many people, maybe one or two team members, engaged in owning something together. When your team says, this is your company, there's no psychological ownership. When they say, this is our company, there's psychological ownership. When they say, this is the job, there is no psychological ownership. When they say this is my job or our job, there is psychological ownership. Last thing I want to share with you as we kind of race through this is there's so many more tips I can go into. But the greatest lesson I can impart is this. I have a small team, collectively, there's 20 folks, and called our team together and said, I have a fun thing we're going to do. I bought one of these old Bozo punching blow up things. Like when I had as a kid, you punch it and it comes down. It's like a weeble wobble. It comes back up. You punch right in the nose. It gives a good squeak off. So I bought this Bozo. They still make them. And gave everyone a dart gun. I said, we're going to do the $5 Bozo battle. And we're going to stand about 15, 20 feet away from it. And everyone shoots. And the first person where the dart hits the nose and we hear the squeak, you win $5. And we're going to do this each day. And it's going to be a fun way to start the morning. Day one was kind of fun. Day two was kind of marginal. Day three, people said, do we have to do a stupid Bozo battle? And by the end of the week, I was like, what, no one wants this? And I'm like, this is not fun. So defeated, stuck a knife in it, Bozo deflated. And I started to slump out. And I said, I guess I guess that was a stupid idea. And Jenna came to me and she said, Mike, I want you to know, people don't care how you care. They care that you do care. She goes, that was a big success. Yeah, it was a goofy, dumb idea. But the fact that you care has elevated our team yet again. That's the key to this. The more you care about your people, the more successful you'll be, even if you fail in the process, even if the steps in your attempts to care are missteps or bad steps. The fact you genuinely care elevates the team. And that's what great leaders do. Brian, that's what I wanted to share with you in our little 30 minutes.
That's awesome. Really appreciate it. I think it's unique that you're talking about doing away with a top-down org structure. And my team, for my
going to that, yeah.
And my marketing agency, we just finished reading Zappos.
Oh, Delivering Happiness, yeah.
Well, we actually, I've read that before, but we just read The Power of Wow.
Yes.
And what an incredible book. Oh my God, that's like fired every entrepreneur brain signal I had in my mind. And so I'm holding back making significant changes. But what was interesting about that and the whole Zappos idea is a horizontal org chart.
Yeah.
And then they went into these, I forgot what they're called. Maybe one of my team can remind me, but they literally came up with little silos and let them start their own businesses almost like within the company. And they created like dozens of lines of revenue.
Mm.
Even went into one girl who noticed that the company was getting ripped off. Or not ripped off, but overpaying for swag. And so she did some research and found out that she could get the same swag for cheaper, like much cheaper. And she was passionate about it. So she started a business doing it and then sold the swag for even cheaper than they were buying it to Zappos.
The win-win.
Yeah. So everybody wins, right? So
I love that.
Know, yeah. I love that idea of, the ecosystem being like almost independent. And they, you know, then they came to a place where each silo had to have their own budget and report that budget and work within the confinements of that budget. And if you had a project, you had to get people bought into it, create your team, and get financial approval from the CFO. And then once approved, you were able to launch it. And
it was It reminds me of a story. I'm sorry to interrupt.
You're good.
Okay. I think it's fascinating because it just triggered this thought. You know, a lot of small business owners, the fear we have is if I bring someone on and I start to develop them and encourage them and educate them, they may leave to start their own business. Like that, you know, that's a big fear. And what some leaders will do is say, well, I'm going to restrain education. I'm going to try to keep this person confined, you know, keep that tiger in a cage. What great leaders do is they say, how can this be an opportunity? And here's what I've seen people do, even in your industry. They say, hey, you may, as you go through this process, decide that one day you want to start your own business. Our goal is to help that become a reality. So we're going to teach you the process. You're going to do the work for us. But as you do this, we're going to expose you to what it's like to own your own business. In fact, we're going to put you on a five-year plan. After 5 years, if you want to start your own business, we're going to be your first investor. We're going to put a little bit of money in, or maybe we're going to introduce to clients and we're going to share in equity. So what great leaders do is they encourage people to follow this path of their desire and they get a stake in the game. They expand their business by expanding their people.
Right. I agree. I think it's awesome. I've never taken that approach, but I will. But we have a guy who just started with us. We got his goals, and one of his goals was to start his own door company.
Yeah.
And I read it and I'm like, you really want to start your own door company? And he's like, yeah. He's like, I'd like to in the next 3 years or so. And I'm like, I can help you with that. I said, give me 3 strong years and I'll mentor you and help teach you everything I've learned so you don't make the same mistakes I did. And so that I think is huge. And not everybody's going to come on board with the idea they're going to be with you until they retire, right?
Right.
And good people can still come for a season. We did get a question though from Matt. He framed the question first. So he said, I love the talents with Task Move. I also agree that most owners are quick to give titles to people that it's not what they do. This also creates significant HR exposure. His question is, in assigning talent to task, you said get rid of titles. Does this then also muddy the water if not clear on tasks? Then he said, in today's employment market, if you're looking for specific positions, do you still keep assigning titles?
So yeah, that's a great question. You bust the titles even at the recruiting level. And so I'll give you a personal example. I had a computer company, and so the title was computer tech or network tech. So you probably have a similar title in your industry. And all the ads, all my competition said computer tech, network tech. Well, I ran an ad that says recent college graduate who loves technology and a Star Wars fan, question mark. That was the title. Now, imagine the person that goes network tech, network tech, network tech. Loves computers and loves Star Wars. What the hell? And it goes in there and says, next to nerds wanted, we love Star Wars too. If you're new in the industry and looking to work in computers, we have this huge experience where you'll learn task, or master task. Come on board. The response was tenfold, 10 times the volume of inquiries over the generic. So what's interesting is in the recruiting process, speak to the culture. The title, speak to the aspiration and give them the tasks listed in there. And you'll attract people who aren't in that title. Ironically, the people who are looking for a title already have that title and usually are unemployed. So usually the people looking for a job, I want to be a network tech, was a network tech and said, I'm out of a job. Where's the next network tech job? So usually the people who are struggling to perform are the ones looking for the title. It's the people who are aspirational may not even know what the title is yet. The people with the most potential. Eddie Van Halen did not know he was a guitarist when he turned 12. He thought he was a drummer. And gosh, if we said, you know, young person looking to experience more with music, try every instrument out there. Come on, join us. And we would found a guitarist. Speak to your aspiration. And I think it'll be transformative for you.
That's where my mind went. When I'm thinking about like the idea of doing away with titles, like how do you, like the whole infrastructure of recruiting is built on, all right, what's the position that you're hiring for, right?
Yeah.
That title, and then build your description. So I can see where Matt was going with that.
Yeah. And there's a word, entitlement. It has the word title in it. An entitlement is where we believe that we are deserving of something without having demonstrated it. That's called entitled. And titles triggers entitlement, meaning once I have that title, that's who I am, regardless of my ability to perform at that level. That's the danger of titles, because it can trigger entitlement. So by stripping that away, you avoid it. Now, here's the thing. Unwinding titles isn't easy. It's a slow process. You don't just overnight say, no one here has titles. It's all about tasks. But any new person, you can get started on that right away. And established people, ask them, don't tell them, ask them what they want to do most. And slowly you'll start blurring the lines of titles.
That's good. Since no one else has a question, I'm going to hog the few minutes we have left with a question that I have. So we're constantly trying to find creative ways to get our guys home and spend time with family. Since COVID, I feel like it's shifted a lot. It used to be, how much money can I make? Now it's a lot about, you know, how much money can I make and spend time at home?
I love it.
Yeah. So I think that's a win-win for the employee, right? Mm-hmm. And with guys in the field, it's very difficult. Do you have any suggestions for business owners on how we can create an atmosphere where we can give more flexibility to our guys in the field and girls? Because we have, you know, some of us have female
service. Of course. Yeah.
How do we, you know, I interviewed a guy the other day. He said, there's 2 days every 2 weeks I got to pick my daughter up from daycare.
I think, Ryan, at least on my side, you're cutting out. So if you guys,
and I'm like, man, effort from my point. But do you have any suggestion, a way to get people? Are you okay now?
Yeah. Now I got you. Yeah. It cut out. I got the essence of what you're asking and my whole system. Yeah. So there's a concept that was originally brought about by Best Buy called ROWE. ROWE stands for Results Oriented Work Environment. And what they did with great success, I actually documented it in my newest book, and All In, is that they said, instead of measuring people's time, let's measure their output. And they were paid effectively per project. So one consideration is to say, hey, every project you get done, and maybe you have different grades of projects, the complexity or whatever, you will get X dollars if it takes you 10 minutes or 10 hours. And maybe there's other variables. If the customer is thrilled with the output, meaning they've tested it after 6 months, we're going to call them or whatever it is to ensure the quality on that 6 month day. If you have a 5-star rating, you're also going to get a bonus or something like that. But you allow people the flexibility, saying, listen, you can do this when you want. You can have that flexibility. In fact, we'll even empower you. You can contact the customer, or we'll contact on your behalf, to schedule around their needs and your needs. So if you're going to pick up your daughter, we'll coordinate the customer and say, hey, listen, so-and-so is coming after. They're going to pick up their daughter, bring their daughter home, and then they're going to come do the project. It'll be in the evening. Is that acceptable? Now, what's beautiful about a situation like that, too, is it brings humanity to it. When I know the person installing my garage door is raising a family and being of service to their family, I'm actually more engaged than it's just a transaction of some nameless face doing a job for me. And actually, I'm more interested in a successful outcome. I'm more supportive of it. I may offer flexibility, more flexibility, because I want that. So you can bring that about. I would simply try this, though. So pick an employee to do this with. Tell, if it comes out to your team, say, listen, we're trying something out to see if it works here, and we'll expand it, or we'll modify, or maybe we'll abandon it. But we're trying things out. And that's the way I would approach it.
Okay, good deal. So we got two new questions. Just let me know when I'm out of time. Does your idea work with the EOS accountability chart doctrine?
Yeah, by all means. So that's Gino Wickman's work. Gino Wickman was kind enough to, we're friends, and he was kind enough to endorse my book, talking about how it integrates with his work that he does. So by all means.
Nice.
Simply put.
All right. The trades are traditionally a pyramid structure. How would you suggest moving from a pyramid structure to a web structure? How do you communicate responsibilities, who they should talk to about certain things with all members of the team?
Yeah, and you're right. And so, you know, how do you break tradition, which is so hard to do? You do it in small pieces. It's like eating an elephant. You take one bite at a time. What we're going to do here is start in small sections of your business. Now, it depends on the size of your business. If you have 20 or 30 people, we can start with one or two people and start blurring the lines. In manufacturing, moving from the traditional process to what's called cells, that's a new lean manufacturing principle. You can do it in sections to see how a cell does, and you get dynamic feedback. The biggest part of a transition like this is actually buy-in. It's not that it doesn't work or not work. Will the team be willing to make the transition? And inevitably, the best way to do it is through, ironically, psychological ownership. Have them generate the idea. So you tell people, hey guys, we have a traditional pyramid structure because that's what our industry does. It's very laden in process and overwhelming. We want to be more dynamic. I have some thoughts, but I want to hear your thoughts on how to do it. When someone creates an idea, they own the idea. And so we just want to invite the team to talk about, well, here's other ways we could structure our organization. And the biggest fans of it are the ones who are most likely to take ownership over that. And you say, hey, thanks for bringing out these ideas of a new structure. Maybe they form their own web-like structure, or they talk about ways of breaking the pyramid, and you start with those folks. And then you build it and build it and build it. Some people in large organizations in particular will say, the old way was the only way. That's how the old man did it, so I expect the same. Some people will not be able to make the change to this new environment, and you should give them the option. You should encourage them to seek employment elsewhere, because that will actually serve them in a different environment, because they won't be served here anymore. But most people, you'll see, if they create the idea, they'll engage in the idea.
Yeah, I don't think it was Zappos's idea, but they use this method in the book, and they talk about the idea between how businesses don't last forever, but most well-run cities do.
Yes.
And mayors aren't responsible for each business within the city, but oversees the infrastructure of the city itself.
Yeah.
And the businesses operate individually, right? And everyone pays up through taxes to support the infrastructure of the city.
Yeah. And you allow the dynamics. You know, cities grow and condense. You'll see places that are fully raised so they can rebuild or bring it to parkland, and then you'll see cities expand and contract. A great leader allows that naturally to happen. When we try to control it, it's impossible. One thing, I got split in a second. When you and I were talking offline, you encouraged me to have a big ask. So I do for the group with All In. I want to first, Ryan, thank you. I know everyone's getting a copy of the book. Here's my ask, and it's very selfish, but it will serve me. If you're on this call right now and you're willing to go on Amazon and simply put the All In, you have to type in All In. There's many versions of it, but all different titles, All In. My name is Mike. So All In Mike, and it'll come up. If you're willing to simply put in your shopping cart, I'm not even inviting you to or encouraging you to buy it. You're getting a free copy. But if you're willing to put in your shopping cart on Amazon and just let it sit there for a week, what we're finding is it triggers the algorithm to encourage other people to buy the book because they're seeing a degree of interest. So if you're willing to just put in your shopping cart for the next week or so, could you just put that in the chat? Because I want to thank you for that. But that's a little bit of a selfish ask I wanted to get in.
Done. I did
it. Dude, you're the man. Ryan, thank you. Yes, yeah. Let's sit there. Jason, thank you.
Jason As Meadows. Always, thanks for coming on. We love having you on. You always bring good insight and thought-provoking ideas. So I want to let you know, thank you for bringing that again this time, as always.
My joy.
And then we'll be reading your All-In book, a lot of us together here over the next month or two. So we appreciate it.
Amazing. Appreciate you. Be well, Ryan.
Take care.
See y'all. Thanks again, Jason.
Thank you guys for attending. If you need anything, hit me up.